FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and the markets are really gyrating, giving pause for thought at the very least, fear to traders and others who are just worried about being on the wrong side of the trade. But here with us is Gordon T. Long, who's never on the wrong side of the markets. Gordon, how are you?
I wish that was true, Carrie. I'm doing fine. Thank you very much. But I've had my share of scars.
Hey, haven't we all? But really,
that's experience, I think.
But. Yeah, comes from living. But you know, you look at it as you've postulated, the credit cycle has turned. And
yes.
What does that mean? How do we know it's happened? And what do you do about it?
And everybody needs to recognize it doesn't change often, right? As you know, Carrie, I think you're an old credit lawyer, are you not?
Yes, I know.
But you understand usually, this better than the vast majority of people. But the credit market always leads the equity markets by quite a period of time. And so the credit markets have definitely shifted. There's all sorts of proof of that in the high yield. But really what's driving it is that the top line of corporations hasn't been there, the revenue growth, for quite some time. Quarter after quarter, it's been falling. Margins have been under pressure. Earnings for the last couple quarters are down and are going to be down dramatically again in Q4. We've been able to hide them with buybacks, and therefore the earnings per share look good. But what's happened now is cash flow is went negative. EBITDA is falling. And when that happens, the credit analysts, really, they don't care what you declare as profit. What they care is what your free cash flow is versus the debt level that you have. And we've been piling up corporate debt to do buybacks. So the debt is way up. The cash flow is falling. And they're saying, hey, you have a credit rating problem. And so that's starting to change. And with oil prices having fallen and commodities having fallen, these are industries that are highly leveraged, capital intensive, huge amounts of debt. And suddenly, as you know, with those prices down, oil at $30 a barrel, they've got serious issues. So their credit ratings are a problem. And when everybody gets nervous, credit tightens. And that's what's going on right now. And I think we're early in the stage.
Yeah, well, you know, you're starting to see in the auto arena higher defaults, not out of control, but certainly the beginning stages of it. Haven't so much seen it in housing yet, but what you have seen is they keep cutting back credit standards, what I call pulse loans, meaning you got a pulse, you got a loan. And
you call it deep subprime now.
Yeah, subprime or subprime. You know, all the hallmarks of a credit bust on its way. And potentially the fallout's going to be far worse than it was in 2008-09.
Yes. Yeah, I believe it will be, Carrie, or potentially will be. See, these things will happen. The question will be, what miracle do the central banks and the government, or what rabbit do they try and pull out of the hat? Another round of quantitative easing, near zero interest rates to stimulate, push all that excess reserves, $2.8 trillion that's sitting at the reserve, Federal Reserve, excess reserves out, same as what Japan has just done with negative rates. These are the kinds of things that you can expect them to do to really complicate these situations with credit slowing down, stimulate them.
Yeah.
Will it be successful? No. Will it buy us more time? That's what we can debate. Well, but we're running out of runway, that's for sure.
At some point, like you said, you run out of runway or you go over the abyss, where I think we see it now, where each new dollar of credit created is getting to a point where it'll actually decrease
I believe that,
economic
Carrie,
activity.
It's been falling for years. I believe now it's counterproductive because there's so much debt that the creating more money is not at all helping. I think they know that now in the central banks. You know, and I've had this discussion, I think previously, this whole idea of quantitative easing, which increased demand, may have been a viable alternative or solution to stimulate in 2009, 2010. But really what it did, it's not about demand. It's been about supply and this massive overbuilding around the world, not in the United States, but in all emerging markets. We have so much supply automotives is an example out there, that now they've lost pricing power. And without pricing power, they start having to discount to stay alive. And you're seeing emerging markets slow down so dramatically, shipping rates, et cetera, around the world. This is a real concern, especially when credit starts to tighten, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would say we've seen it in the U.S., but it went to like the oil sector, those easy dollars, went to autos, went to the energy sector for sure, because if debt was priced fairly in accordance with risk and in accordance with actual market interest rates, how much fracking would have been taken place or how much wouldn't have is really the question.
Yeah, that's the big, you're right on a big theme. We've mispriced risk for so long. I'm not even sure we fully, it's not there. And we have lack of price discovery. And it's all led to massive malinvestment. And at some point, you just run out of cash to support it when the debt's that high. And it's not too complicated. But what happens is when you got overcapacity and oversupply and you don't have pricing power, things come down very, very quickly in terms of fall, and everybody starts to head for the exits. And that's what's going on. You see the distressed debt starting to go through the roof, and the energy and commodities players. And I don't see any change in sight for the energy complex and for the commodity complex. But Gary, I need to make another point. Then they cut back in production, they lay off people, and prices keep falling, they fight. And then what happens, all of a sudden it turns, and because they've laid off people and they can't, and to start up again takes them 18 months to get back on production, suddenly prices go up the other way in a massive amount. So, you know, let's say oil dropped to $10, $15, $20 a barrel, but when it spikes, suddenly you'll be back to $50, $60 in a heartbeat. So you get killed on the way down, and then you miss it on the way up. And yeah. Nobody can stay in long enough or stay solvent enough to stay in for the ride.
Oh, that's for certain. We know this to be true. We've seen it so many times in the past.
Consistent in commodities, yeah. Or energy, consistent behavior, consistent cycle.
Yeah, it's just the magnitude of it that is really what we haven't seen.
We've never seen it at this scale globally in these kinds of sectors to this degree and this sustained. That's so things start to break. And all these, you know, the Glencores and all these highly leveraged, basically commodity hedges companies is what they are, reminds me of Enron's in a new form today, for those who remember the Enron debacle. But there's it's not just one now. There's many, many of them, and they're operating large scale globally. So any one of these could implode on a credit could be serious problems. But additionally, Kerry, you know, with this on this energy theme, we've got countries now that are in trouble. Because the OPEC countries, like, let's pick on Saudi Arabia, their current accounts they can't support themselves. So you've got Saudi Arabia talking about going out with this Saudi Aramco floating a $10 trillion IPO. $10 trillion. Kerry, our supposed debt in the United States is $19 trillion, right? Mm. I mean, think if that was to go through, but that's $10 trillion we're going to suck out of the global economy? Well, no, I'm sure they'll keep 51% of the shares, but...
Oh, we could write them a check.
Well, I think if they ever did it, China and Russia would come in and buy a big chunk of it. Now, that would be a destabilizing factor, wouldn't it?
Yes. I don't think it's going to happen. Maybe they'll sell off a small piece, or maybe they'll sell off a piece of a joint venture. I think that's more what they were focused on. But the Saudi finance minister was ambiguous in his desire to do it. So we're not really sure.
But don't underestimate the problems going on now that we basically have the beginnings of an oil war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And Iran now, that sanctions were lifted, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, so they can now sell oil. We produce, 34 million barrels a day. Iran can suddenly, they'll get 3.2, but they'll quickly get to 5 million barrels. That's a lot of oil. Mm-hmm. And $1 is better than no dollars in terms of to their economy. So I don't think there's any level that they won't go to because they really want to move their oil. And now you've got an issue between a Sunni side of it in Saudi Arabia and a Shiite side of it in Iran, which in itself is another set of conflicts, which is a central conflict in Syria, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
this is getting very, very complicated and destabilizing. Mm-hmm. That's what's new here today. And, you know, geopolitical risk is always an event. Risk is always something in the cards. But it's huger. It's much larger than it's ever been. And so that today for investors, it's about risk mitigation and all the elements that go into risk and really understanding that. And we all think we do it, but you can't hedge as much anymore because you've got everybody on the same side of the trade. There's everything is so highly correlated today.
Yeah.
And that is a huge problem. We were talking before the show. Look at the amount of ETFs that are trading today and how all those ETFs are indexed ETFs in many cases around the world, and they all spring from a common denominator. But 30% of the trading in U.S. equities are these ETFs. And if you get inside that, we're talking about the FANG stocks, Facebook, Alphabet or Google, Netflix. And so if they start to go down, they take the indexes, but they take global indexes carry with them because it's all correlated. And so I'm concerned that if we start to get this credit cycle starts to accelerate, margins start to get tighter and selling begins and profits are falling. Profits are really coming down. One of the reasons, strong U.S. dollar, but they just don't have the growth. This could get out of control very quickly.
Yeah.
And but I'm not preaching doom and gloom because I think the governments and central banks are fully aware of this. And you remember in Japan, they went to negative interest rate, but the biggest buyer of the Nikkei is the Bank of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So they're buying the stock market. That's not uncommon. So, you know, would it shock you if I said someday I think that the Fed will be buying the S&P?
Well, we know that the world's central banks are busy buying stocks, and we know about the plunge protection team, been around for a long, long time. And so they buy everything, anything and everything. And, you know, it just reminds me of what FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Treasury Secretary, said in 1939. And it's true. It's true then as it is now. He said, never before have we spent more money, borrowed more money, and did more stuff. And yet the economy he was referring to unemployment, is right where it was at when we started in 1934. So that's where we're at now. History repeating itself. Oh, God, yeah. It's a credit bust. You know, credit creation got out of control and leading to malinvestment on the most massive scale we've ever seen since that time. And then all of a sudden, the credit bubble bursts and reality is there. In the Depression, they tried, but not like they tried now. Nothing like this. But
well, they couldn't do it game then because we were on a gold-based currency. We didn't have a fiat currency, and they didn't have all these securitization products, et cetera. And we didn't have a $7 trillion swaps market, over-the-counter, unregulated swaps market.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's so many derivations to derivatives, $1.4 trillion in derivatives that are trading. So all it does is it creates an illusion. It's like are we in a depression like in the 30s? Well, we don't have food kitchens. I would say we got 50 million people on food stamps.
We have a virtual bread line instead of an actual one.
It's a virtual bread line, except they're standing in the line with you and you don't know that they're in the bread line.
Hey, but God forbid that that EBT card doesn't get replenished at midnight of the first day of the month. Then you'll know.
Walmart staffs their stores around that.
Yeah, they're, you know, biggest beneficiary of the welfare state of any company out there, or one of the biggest, obviously. But anyway, Gordon, so prescription solution for the individual. If you were Joe Sixpack, what would you be doing now?
Well, this is the year to be cautious. There's nothing wrong with cash, okay? And this is the year it's about return of your capital, not on your capital. So
return of investment, not return on investment, ROI.
So you know, you always want to be cautious, but particularly now in the state that you want to be in. So that's what you have to do. And it's being very, very diversified. And I'm talking about not just in assets, but where you hold those assets, where they're secured. Do you trust your banks, et cetera? So you really need to think about that long and hard. Though I think a lot of the hard, this is a time for hard assets when you start debasing currencies and playing these kinds of games. You really need to be looking at, but get a very knowledgeable investment manager to assist you who really truly understands these problems, or you're gonna be a casualty.
Absolutely. So don't be a casualty. Go over to Gordon's site, your site, Gordon, where we can check your research.
Yeah, thank you very much, Gary. GordonKeyLong.com. Or the Financial Repression Authority, a new site that we have. And we focus on a lot of this, what's happening in this era of financial repression, low interest rates, and what we expect these central bankers to do and what you should be doing about it.
Hey, and that's what it really comes down to. And we've always got your work over at financialsurvivalnetwork.com, Gordon. And just go there, check out the articles from authorities all over the world, just like Gordon, Gerald Celente, and Jim Sinclair, and so many others. Hey, you've had an easy ride the past 4.5, 5 years, basically. Things weren't particularly getting better, weren't particularly getting worse. Potential exists now where things could get worse really quick. Not that it's going to happen. Maybe they'll pull another rabbit out of the hat, but what if they don't? That's what you need to be thinking of. Go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Gordon, it's really good talking to you. We will talk to you again soon.
Always a pleasure, Kerry. Enjoy it. Talk to you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.